Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
8:09, January 8th, the one-week anniversary of the attack on Bourbon Street. We'll talk to Ronald Surpass, former NLPD superintendent, about how things have changed and what's gone through his mind since we first spoke to him last Thursday morning, the day after the attack. If you go to WWL.com, at the top of the page, the top story, you'll see Tommy Tucker and Colin Arnold, bollards, barriers, both. It's not about me. It's about what Colin Arnold had to say. It's a very factual, engineering-based, if you will, research-oriented, apolitical conversation about bollards and barriers and the future, and it'll really help to distinguish. And the Lieutenant Governor, I don't know if he was misspoke or not when he said balusters, but I've not heard of balusters. I've heard of bollards and barriers and wedge barriers and arch barriers, and the devil is indeed in the details and what's the best way to protect the quarter and the city and allow access and egress of emergency vehicles and people to come in and out because it's a neighborhood as well as a tourist attraction. Anyway, if you get a chance, go to WWL.com, read that. Nathan Rizzuti did a heck of a job of encapsulating it for you. It's all in one place. You can get all the information you need. We'll take a break. Come back with Ronald Surpass. I'm Tommy Tucker. This is WWL. Another cold day in New Orleans, January 8th, anniversary of the battle in New Orleans. Highs today only of 47. Currently, it's 34 degrees. I'll add 58 degrees in the studio. Don't know why, but I'm wearing my heavy coat, and I'm glad I am. Ronald Surpass joins us now, former NLPD superintendent, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, currently professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, and our friend. Talk about the Bourbon Street attack. Good morning, Chief. How are you?
Tommy, I'm great, but if you're in your office wearing a heavy coat, you must not have anything else on.
No, I am. It's 58 degrees in here. And, you know, I like it cold, but not this cold. This is crazy. I need gloves, too. It's so cold in here. But anyway, let's talk about...
I think somebody should notify HR.
I'm happy where I am, Chief. Let's not start any trouble, please. Everybody's happy with everything. Let's just leave it alone, please. Let's talk about... I appreciate you. I really do. Let's talk about, you know, we spoke to you last Thursday after this first happened. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about what's been revealed since then and just what's been going through your mind since then.
I think one of the most interesting and a terrible tragedy, what's going to be one of the more interesting documents is the report that was published in 2019. You know, it's kind of like the old Nixon thing. Who knew what when? Mm-hmm. What did they do about it when? Where has it gone from there? The second thing, and we talked about this a little bit last week, there are so many uniquenesses to being one of the oldest walking cities in the country that has a daily walking promenade on Royal Street, no traffic, and it has a daily walking promenade on Bourbon Street at night, no traffic. And it's been like that for the 45 years that I'm aware of, as well as I'm sure much longer than that. So how do you balance all these issues? Recognizing the tremendous loss of life is so sad, and the injuries are so sad.
Colin Arnold and I had a long discussion yesterday, and it was apolitical. It was just about bollards and the different types of barriers. Mm-hmm. I quoted you when you talked about, and he remembered the bollards that you said you as an officer would carry and put into place. As I understand it, those come in three classes. One of them weigh 44 pounds. The others are 88. And then beyond that, it would be really, you know, you'd have to have a couple of a big old giant Olympic strongest men in America, whatever the hell it is, to carry him and move him. It would have to be done by machine. We also talked about wedge barriers and arch barriers. The arch barriers are the 400-pound yellow things that can be wheeled about that stop a vehicle and then etch into the concrete, as I understand it, or the asphalt to prevent and underneath the vehicle to prevent it from moving forward. The wedge barriers go up and down with a hydraulic ram and battery operated like a ferry boat, so they can go up and down mm-hmm. in a couple of seconds and are operated by officers by battery. When it comes to, as a former superintendent, your thoughts, and again, going back to the walkability of the quarter, The Criminal Justice Committee is going to meet today. You know, they're going to look back and understand that, and that's important about who missed what. But what would your recommendations be? You walked that quarter as a street officer. You paroled it on, patrolled it on horseback. You were the superintendent of the department. What would you suggest? What would be your recommendations?
I think the experience that we had is the one that's the most meaningful to me, and that was there were four bollards for each section of Bourbon Street on either side. They were housed on the street side during the day. The officers would come pick them up. They must have been the 44 ones. They would be enough to significantly slow down or give people time to get out the way if they heard that impact. And those are easy to move. They're easy to pick up. They go down every day. They're fairly stable. The cross streets are always an issue because we would always have pedestrian traffic allowed to go up to Bourbon, wait for a clearance in pedestrian traffic, and go across Bourbon. You think about the taxis and Ubers that got to get back and forth. And then there's always the next level when it's just too crowded. You stop all cross street traffic. When you make the decision to stop the cross street traffic between Dauphine and Royal, I think you're going to need the wedges make a lot of sense. You know, they can be elevated. They can drop for emergency services. And the overarching issue on all of this is the ability of emergency services to get in there, particularly fire and EMS. French Quarter's old. Those buildings are jammed right up on top of each other. The fire department has always had incredibly important advice that we got to get in there quick to try to limit any damage from fire. All these things have to happen at the same time. The French Quarter is a vibrant business entertainment district. So, summary. I liked always the Bourbon bollards that you could just pick up and put down as you needed, that were heavy-duty steel bollards that would help. The cross street bollards are important, and those bollards would start at Iberville and Canal. So the first 100 block of Iberville is a bit wider, and the way it feels and looks. Once you get to the 100 block of Canal, once you get to the 200 block of Bourbon, think about it. You have a daiquiri shop on one corner, you have another business on the other corner, and you begin to see balcony poles on almost every 20 feet throughout Bourbon Street all the way to the end. Very narrow sidewalks.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We'll come back talking to Ronald Surpass. I want to get your take on Ann Kirkpatrick as a superintendent. It was not a good media moment for her about I got the arches confused now. This arch barriers, I think, saying she didn't know they were available. We'll talk about that and more when we come back. 8:21 traffic now, WWL. 8:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Again, I'd suggest you go to WWL.com if you want to know more about wedge barriers, arch barriers, and bollards and different types, because Colin Arnold and then Nathan Rizzuti did a good job of breaking it all down for you and explaining what each are. Ann Kirkpatrick, superintendent, not a great media moment for her chief when she said she didn't know that the arch barriers were available and weren't deployed. Talk about that, if you will, as a former superintendent. I don't know if they were there when you were there or not, but the difficulty in deploying them and also your confidence in Ann Kirkpatrick moving forward.
Well, there can only be one superintendent at a time. Secondly, the barriers that we're talking about now, the arch and wedge barriers, as I recall, were not present in 2014. They became part of an issue after the 27 accidents in Nice, France, which the Landrieu administration, I thought, was wise to do. I think that the ability to have a press conference and to be prepared and planned for it doesn't happen when you're walking on a street corner. So there's always the potential that something just didn't come out the way you intended it to. And likewise, you know, we're going to watch the city council go through these hearings in the next few days. And I want to remind the listening audience, Tommy, a police chief can't buy a piece of equipment for the police department unless it goes to the mayor and the mayor gets it approved by the council. For the council to look at this is appropriate, but they certainly can't act like they didn't know anything about it. So in this case, I think the superintendent is going to need some time to be able to answer all the questions as effectively and efficiently as possible, and to make sure that if there are any errors in statements, you just be honest about it. The public appreciates when leaders and political leaders are willing to say, you know what, I just got that wrong. Let me correct it. Let me get the record right. Let me go back and fix it. I'm not suggesting she's done any of that yet. What I'm suggesting is that's a necessary requirement, I think, to be an effective political or public leader. which oftentimes we see people are very unlikely to admit they made a mistake, which causes more confusion by the public.
One question I had was, again, walking around Washington, D.C. over the weekend with the security and as tight as it was and having to walk around barricades, this and that, knowing how much people griped when the streets were being repaired in the French Quarter and having to walk around this and walk around that. Should people at this point maybe watch what they ask for because they may just get it? Because let me just say this and I'll turn it over to you. There's no way to make anything secure from everything, right? But then again, increased security does come at a price. Your thoughts on all of that?
I think the public understands that you can't secure everything totally unless it's inside of a bank vault. But I think they want to know that people were making the best reasonable and rational decisions that they could. And it's not often that I would say Mayor Cantrell, I think, demonstrated a very good leadership point. But at the events on Monday on the opening up of the 12th night, she said, we have to be strong. We have to move forward. If we're going to be a city that has Mardi Gras, it's got to be safe. But we got to have a city that's going to do Mardi Gras. So there's your balance, right? That's the balance. Do you want to be locked inside of a vault? Or do you want to continue to live a social life and be as safe as you can and have confidence that the government has done everything that they possibly could rationally, everything they possibly could experientially? Because you're right, we all make a decision every day when we go outside to expose ourselves. And in D.C., of course, you had the state funeral for President Carter, which I'm sure produced a tremendous different look of the security package around the Capitol, including the January 6th certification of the election.
So along those lines, can you compare, and we got to go here, I know, Jordan, but can you really compare, and you've been around, can you compare New Orleans to New York City in terms of resources or population or other giant cities like that, really?
I think what has to be fairly done is to compare cities with like walking promenades every day, all day. I've been to New York a lot of times, and I haven't been all over New York, but when you go to New York Times Square, you don't walk in the street, do you?
No.
You walk on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. So I think comparing New Orleans to other cities that have these walking promenades is where I would be looking. If you block off the cross streets at New York's Times Square on New Year's Eve, that makes a lot of sense because you're allowing people into the street. But I've been to New York a bunch of times, and you don't get to walk in New York Times Square on the street unless you're on a crosswalk. So compare New Orleans to other cities that have the same walking promenades for centuries and get a better sense there of what you're looking at.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate your insight as always. Ronald Surpass, former superintendent of the NOPD, will talk to Arthur Hardy, editor of the Mardi Gras Guide, about what Mardi Gras is likely to look like post this Bourbon Street attack. 8:31, minute late. Time now, WWL First News. Pelicans came out with a great-looking T-shirt to benefit the United Way of Southeast Louisiana with NOLA in the Pelicans font with a heart where the O should be. And I understand they were on sale at the gift shop last night, and soon they'll be available online. And it's a great-looking shirt. I think everybody's going to want one, so we'll try to tell you more about that as we find out more. And you can look, go to Twitter and see the shirt if you like. I'm trying to find a picture of it now so I can retweet it. I'm doing it right now. If you follow me at I already have, as a matter of fact, at TTuckerWWL, I've already retweeted it, and you'll see the logo and the shirt that I'm talking about. 8:40, 20 till 10, we'll talk to Arthur Hardy, publisher, editor of the Mardi Gras Guide, and we come back about carnival season, the Bourbon Street attack, and more here on WWL. 8:45, Tommy Tucker, WWL, quarter till 9, joined now by our friend Arthur Hardy, founder of the Mardi Gras Guide. Hey, Arthur, how you?
Good morning, Tommy. How you doing?
I'm good. I have my own rules when it comes to this kind of thing, my own rule book. So I'm going to tell you Happy New Year. You got that right.
I'm a listener, you know?
Okay. I don't care what anybody else says. If I'm seeing you or talking to you for the first time and it's early on in the year, I'm going to tell you Happy New Year and to hell with everybody.
And I appreciate it.
All right. Let's talk about... let's start with the happy stuff, okay? Let's talk about, I always mess it up. Is it 40 funny fellows or funny 40 fellows?
Funny 40 fellows.
Yeah, those and the crew of Jonah Arc, what's happened already so far this Mardi Gras season?
Well, they got off to a great start. Surprisingly large crowds considering the weather, you know. It was a really good night, and that day actually began 10 o'clock in the morning at the mayor's kickoff to the carnival season that's held every year at Mardi Gras World. And she did a really good job of, I don't like the term working the crowd, but mm-hmm. but getting the audience involved in the mood of, yeah, we're sad, you know, and this is a terrible thing, but hey, this is New Orleans and we have to go on. You know, you don't surrender. You choose to celebrate, just as we did after COVID and after Katrina, and really got the crowd into it that, yeah, you're right. You know, this was terrible, but we got to go on. And I think, and I heard you say the same thing yesterday, and in fact, I was asked to address the crowd there on Monday, exactly what you said. This is going to be the safest Mardi Gras ever because of Super Bowl first and, of course, because of this tragedy. The questions now are what kind of changes will be put in place now that we're a Tier 1 designated area. And the good news is undoubtedly more security than ever. The questionable news is what kind of changes will be in place. I had a guy from Zulu call me yesterday. He said, you think there's any chance I won't be able to bring my ice chest into the convention center for the ball? Mm-hmm. Hadn't thought about that. I mean, would they say no ice chests? And who's in charge here? I heard J.P. Morrell yesterday with Newell say that even parade routes could be changed if the federal authorities say this is not safe, this is where you'll parade. It's too early, and we don't want to overreact, but there are some concerns about a downside to more control from the federal government.
We had a shooting on a parade route, had to be a decade ago, and I was on the air after it happened, and Garland Robinette, our good friend, texted me and said, look up shootings along parade routes at the Rose Bowl Parade and other places, and they do happen. And I know a lot has been made about the Rose Bowl Parade and protection against vehicular attacks and everything else, but you really can't compare Mardi Gras to other parades, can you?
No, you absolutely can't. But, you know, after that shooting, more people showed up at that exact same spot the next night than were there the night of the shooting to say, hey, guess what? You're not taking my corner, pal. You know, this is our celebration, and we're going to go on. But there is a delicate balance. You need to be sensitive to what's happening, yet somehow we have to go on. But a lot of questions out there. I'm optimistic. But we better be prepared for some changes. We might not know about them until after Super Bowl. I mean, all the attention's focused there, as it should be. It's the next event. Mm-hmm. But a lot of conversations will be taking place, I'm sure.
But with that being said, there are some new regulations as well that were set to go into effect, right?
Correct. Again, J.P. Morrell's new ordinance, which was passed by everybody, you know, good or bad. I don't want to put it all on him. Was unanimously passed by the city council, but banning open flame grills, tents, canopies along the parade route. And that's a big, big change. The question always is, how can it be enforced? And we don't know that yet. It's easier to do in the first weekend. Same thing with ladders. We've had laws in place for years about ladders have to be as many feet back from the curb as they are tall. And the first weekend, there's some enforcement. By the second weekend, it seems like it's not that there's not a will to enforce it. There's not the manpower to enforce it.
Now, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. I'll ask the Oakmont Jeweler Talk and Text Line audience here at 504-260-1870. Do you really like the idea of very, very tight security at Mardi Gras? Let me put it that way. Or for the Mardi Gras experience as you have it, and I'm just not talking about the grill thing, but as far as the access and egress and going and coming, can you ever really expect to be completely and totally safe at Mardi Gras? And it goes, Arthur, even, you know, people get killed crossing between floats when they shouldn't do it. And I don't know how the event can ever be made safe. As you said, you can do everything, as the police chief, Superintendent Serpas said, you can do everything you can to make it as safe as possible, but it's never going to be completely safe. 8:51, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:56, 4 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Federal government has designated Mardi Gras as a Tier 1 event similar to the Super Bowl. J.P. Morrell, Arthur Hardy is a guest, by the way, founder of the Mardi Gras Guide, telling Newell Norman yesterday, and you said you heard it, that it could alter the Endymion route. And one question I have is that the Super Bowl goes from city to city, and the NFL security is outstanding. The federal government security is outstanding when it comes to a Tier 1 event. They understand Super Bowls. The question is, do they understand Mardi Gras as locals understand it? And what are you hearing from the crew of Endymion about maybe changes to their route or what that could look like, and why Endymion? Because we've already had fatalities due to vehicles at Endymion. Had nothing to do with terrorism. It was with drunk drivers. Yeah. Thoughts?
Yeah, I talked to Captain Dan Kelly. He's heard nothing from anyone officially or unofficially, and exactly why JP mentioned them. And it may have just been, you know, one of many. I mean, and
maybe because it's the non-traditional route, perhaps.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Perhaps that's it. I'm not sure. And he said how difficult it was to secure that route. But let's face it, all of these routes are, if not impossible, very difficult to secure. I don't know that one route would be any easier than the other. A friend of mine, they said, well, if you see something, say something. I seen a guy with a mask carrying a bag. Mm. I mean, think about it.
That's right. No, really, you're right. That's exactly right.
The opportunities for bad guys to do bad things are enormous. And we just have to be as vigilant and diligent as we can and go on. I don't know. There's no easy answer for them, but you're never going to make it 100% safe.
Arthur, I think you just said a mouthful. If you just think about what Mardi Gras is, so you got somebody in a mask, you don't know who they are, carrying a bag or wheeling an ice chest down St. Charles, right?
Yeah. Why would you be suspicious of that? That's what we do. I did a little survey a couple of years ago. And remember, Mardi Gras is not just in Orleans Parish. You know, Jefferson Parish, we have other parishes, you know, a lot of parishes celebrate Mardi Gras. But I did a survey of the three parish areas, maybe two or three years ago. And we had all 53 parades, a total of 1,088 floats. Now, some of those floats are used more than once. Yeah. But that's 1,088 opportunities for somebody to put something on a float, under a float. How do you secure that? And we're not giving, bad ideas out here. Bad guys think of these things.
Exactly.
You know? So we just got to do our best and pray over it. And I predict this will be the safest one ever. It's just there'll be so much attention focused. And it'll be the things we don't see out there that maybe make us the safest, you know.
The one thing I would say also for people that tend to get hooked up on social media and so forth, that people that are, and I get a text here from somebody saying cancel it all. A lot of the people that are proposing these ideas haven't been to Orleans Parish in 20 years. So
No. Don't tell us what to do.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Arthur. I appreciate your time and your insights. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. It's going to be a black and gold hour. First, we'll talk about the black and gold of oil in a Biden administration, what they're trying to do to ban oil drilling in most federal waters before he leaves. And we'll talk to Jeff Nowak about the Saints' black and gold. So a lot coming up. Stay with us. Tommy Tucker, WWL.